What's going on, everybody? You are listening to The Place Where Sports Opinions Collide, Dead in Sports. I'm your host, Kenneth B. Inge. On the line with me is FIFO. FIFO, what up?
Yo, what it do? What it do?
Chilling, chilling, chilling. And, of course, BZ430. B, what up?
What up, though? Chilling, man. Join us NBA playoffs. You know what I'm saying?
NBA playoffs. Shit. And, you know what, B, I'll go in and say it. Hey, if you guys are on Twitch, follow the 430 on Twitch. Follow your boy on Twitch, KBNG, KBINGE. B, what's your Twitch handle?
Oh, same as always, man. BZ430 across the board. BEZY430.
That's a man that no marketing and branding, man. Keeping it consistent. And and my young starner, my firstborn, Kobe TV, KOBI TV 4 is his. And and there's a reason why I'm announcing this to be announced later. But if you guys are smart, you probably can figure it out. So, yeah, go ahead and do that first. And then later on, the rest is coming. While you at it, subscribe to the podcast, please. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, please. May 1st, things are gonna be different around here. So go ahead and get on board with that. Check out your boy, 12 Kyle. He was here last week. Good to have the brother back with us for another week. It was fun, as always. A little throwback, so it was good having him in the taking the helm for last week, filling in for FIFO. So follow his podcast, 12 Kyle Podcast. Of course, the usuals, the Technical File Podcast with Manny, and Chris Platty, Strictly Hip Hop and Strictly B-Ball Talk. B, I don't know if you saw that, but he did something with John Connor. It was like a John Connor week.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I knew he was getting ready to do that because we had did the Royce the 5'9 review on this podcast. See, he had mentioned it to me that he was going to start, he was getting ready to start that up.
Bet. So, yeah, check out John Connor week. And, of course, go check out the episode with BZ430 on there. And I'm on an episode with Manny too on the Technical File Podcast. So anyway, we're gonna go ahead and get started, man. So this week is we're gonna do things a little bit different. We're gonna talk about the basketball playoffs, but we are taking your questions. So today I just spontaneously decided, hey, letting everybody know we're recording, send us your questions and we'll answer them on the show. So that's what we're doing. So before we get into that, there's just a couple of big headlines that we want to just talk about real quick. So the NFL draft is Thursday. There's been daily conversations about quarterbacks and Saquon Barkley and Lamar Jackson to the Patriots, all of that noise. So, we're not doing like a NFL draft preview because the draft is so full of boom and bust. That it's just not like the NBA. But there are guys at the top, the quarterbacks, and then there's, of course, obviously, Saquon Barkley and Bradley Chubb. Among the quarterbacks, B, who do you think should go first? Who should the Browns take with the number one draft pick?
They should go, big boy, Ben Roethlisberger, prototype body-wise, from Wyoming.
Josh Allen.
Allen. I was about to say his last name Allen. Yeah, my man from Wyoming. I think with the safe pick, just go with that. Let have him under the clipboard for a year. Still make Tyrod Taylor your starter. I hate to use that term, like use him as like an insurance work or something. See how he, see how he plays this season, and right. Keep Allen under the clipboard this upcoming season. Let him, watch under Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor, hopefully, from the Browns coming off of 0-16 season, hopefully they can go, 7-9 or 6-10 or something like that. I think they should just go with that, with the safe pick, with the first pick. And hopefully, I doubt this will happen, but if Barkley falls to him at 4, you got to get him. You have to get him if he falls to 4. But, yeah, I think they should just go with QB, man. At least – you building something with that from scratch. And you never know. Tyrod Taylor, if he's cool with being a multi-millionaire backup QB, let him be. Let that happen if Allen can kind of fill in that space and be a starter within a year or 2 years from now. So, you know, I say get the QB.
FIFO, would you take Allen or would you take someone else if you were the Browns?
You know, the Browns, it just seems like they can't do nothing right.
Right.
Two first-round picks and the first five picks. We hear rumors they're going to take two quarterbacks.
That would be so stupid.
That is the dumbest thing. Now, if you want to take two quarterbacks, and you want to take one at one or the first one at four and then use your second, third, or fourth-round pick on the second one, I'm cool with that. But you can't use the number one and number four picks on the quarterback. That's
stupid. That's right.
Oh my God. That would be the wrong move. Now, I think the safest pick to me is Sam Darnold. I think where Cleveland is and the level of talent that they've been able to accumulate, I think they have to go safe pick. So that's the reason why I'm going Sam Darnold. I don't think anything is super special about the guy outside of he makes the play that needs to be made, and he's just solid. But the other guys, I think, have more upside. Josh Allen, and who's the other guy?
Rosen.
Rosen from UCLA. UCLA. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I think both of those guys have bigger upside. But if I'm Cleveland, I feel like I'd rather take the safer pick just because they have not had success. And I think Darnold is – I'm not saying he's going to be a superstar. I don't think he's going to be Peyton. I don't think he's going to be Aaron Rodgers or anything like that. But I think that he can be a better version than Alex Smith. And I think where the Browns are, that's what you need to take. I don't think you need to take a guy that, if we coach him right – nah, man, you haven't had success with that yet. You know, so I think they need a starting point. I think Sam Darnold is the most logical pick for them. Or if they wanted to trade down and use the number four pick for a quarterback and accumulate two other first-round picks or something like that, I'm cool with that. I don't necessarily say that they got to use the first pick for a quarterback, but they definitely need to take a quarterback, whether it's one or four. They have to do that. That is a must. And at the end of the day, Sam Darnold, I think he's the safest guy for him, man. I don't think he need to take no risk.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you there. And, you know, I've had my criticisms of Darnold, but I learned that he really just started playing football. Like, he played, one season in high school, and then, of course, he played, two or a season and a half in college. So, I think if you are the Browns, picking Darnold is definitely safe, and nobody will fault you if he turns into a bust. Mm-hmm. If you pick Allen and he turns into a bust and Sam Darnold becomes the guy, then what? Now, there's a lot of hype about Josh Allen. Everybody's saying he is the man, like you said, Big Ben 2.0. But you have to trust that organization to be able to develop him. And you got to trust that Hugh Jackson is the guy, that the real QB whisperer that everybody says that he is. I don't know if he is or not, but he's had success in the past with quarterbacks. So based on his track record, you would think so, but you are the Browns, and you also have your history going against you for whatever reason. So take Darnold. If he doesn't work out, he just doesn't work out. Now, where that could turn around and bite you later on is whether or not Saquon Barkley turns out to be the guy, the next Le'Veon Bell, or if Josh Allen does indeed turn out to be like the man. But he's so raw and underdeveloped, and to go to Cleveland, I think, would be a risk. So if I'm them, I would just take Sam Darnold and roll with it. Everybody's saying he's the consensus number one pick for the most part. I don't think anybody can fault you if it just doesn't work out. The other guy that people are saying is the best player in the draft is Saquon Barkley. Rumors now are circling that the Giants will indeed take him if he's there. But, of course, that's the situation. So you think they should go QB?
They have to go QB. Cause, look, man, we've been doing dead-end sports for at least 4 or 5 years now. And I remember when we first started and we were actually doing videos, and I said, you know, Eli is one of these guys that every other year he's going to have a good year. but he has yet to put back-to-back good years, you know what I'm saying? And he's only gotten worse. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's nothing that shows or proves to me that he should be the starter moving forward. In all honesty, if it was up, look, man, and look, football is a cutthroat sport. So, you know, it's not personal, but I'd cut Eli. Because you're not going to trade him. Like, you really want Eli to groom your next guy? Eli wasn't Peyton. Eli wasn't surgical with it. You know what I'm saying? So I'd cut Eli.
Wow.
I'd cut him, and I'd draft a quarterback, and guess what? He's going to be my starter day one.
Two Super Bowl rings. He beat Brady twice.
Doesn't matter. Thank you. What have you done for me lately? Look, Belichick is trying to get rid of Tom Brady, bro. Let's be honest. I don't have no connects. I don't know nobody. But look, I know what it looks like outside looking in. And what it looks like is Belichick was ready to move on because he had his guy in Jimmy G. And in football, that's what you have to do. If you want to stay relevant, you got to let him go. And Eli is at that point. Like, okay, can I put it to you like this? What NFL franchise, if Eli was a free agent today right now, would pick Eli up?
I don't know. Because the Jets are probably going to take a quarterback. Buffalo will probably get a quarterback somewhere.
Yep.
Washington traded for one. Arizona maybe? But they may get one.
They have to get one because, you know, the whole Carson Palmer thing is over. They're not going to go back to an old quarterback. Like, what's the See, that's what I'm saying. What's the risk in taking this old beat-up quarterback? Is he going to make you a Super Bowl contender? Hell no. He's not that guy. So you got to move on from him. In all honesty, he should be looking for booth jobs. He need to be on TV. That's where Eli is now.
Dang. FIFO cold with it today.
I know, so cold-blooded, boy.
I know, yeah, right?
I'm just saying.
Who should they pick, then? Who would you pick?
I'll probably pick, I think Josh Allen, if he's still available. Mainly because of the bigger arm, you know, in that New York wind and in that weather, you need that. So that's who I would like to get. But if you take Rosen or Allen, you got to take one of them guys. You got to take one of them. Or Darnold. One of those three. Whichever one, like whoever gets taken number one, you have a pick of the one of the other two guys. And I think that's what they got to do. Saquon Barkley is nice only if you had a young quarterback right now. But with Eli, look, man, if they take Saquon, where does that put them in the NFC? Like, are they better than the Cowboys? Are they better than Philly? Are they better than the Redskins? Everybody better than the Redskins. But are they really better? Can they contend if you get Saquon Barkley, you keep Eli?
Not with that offensive line. I think that's my concern, that line. They've been drafting running backs, but the line can't block for them. So
that's the reason why they should have traded OBJ. Get more draft picks, cut Eli, draft your quarterback, shore up that O-line. You know, because the weapon, you can go get weapons. It looked like Julio don't want to be in Atlanta no more. He maybe could have got Julio. I'm just saying, man, I would have severed ties with OBJ. I would have traded him and got as much as I could for him. And I would have definitely gotten rid of Eli. Eli would have been gone. You'd have been free agent.
Man, B, FIFO done traded Odell Beckham Jr. He done cut Eli. Jesus.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with it because because once you let go of your guy that you've been your quarterback, when I mean your guy, your quarterback that you've been riding for the last, 12 to 13 years. You know, at this point, if you know he's at the end of this role, why not start the rebuilding process? Why not? You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, yeah, I don't have an issue with what FIFO's saying. I ain't going to say, dang, that's wrong. But, like, hey, it's a business. So, you know, and we already know what Odell Beckham, he's drama. So, hey, it's a business, man. Got to do what you got to do. Got to move on. Got to start from scratch. So, that's part of the process. Yeah, I would do that, too.
So, you wouldn't take Barkley?
You said I wouldn't take Barkley?
Yeah, I'm asking you to take Barkley or
yeah. You gotta take Barkley, man. He's like, but you know what? Because he's like one of those guys where he's NFL ready. Like, unless he go to a system that has horrible offensive line, this guy is ready, man.
Giants' offensive line is horrible, B.
Yeah, and he might go there too. He might end up going there, which is sad, but still. I would probably just get a QB then. If you plan on letting whatchamacallit walk, get your QB.
But they not though. You know, like they're committed to they Eli. Not. They yeah. say Eli the starter next season. I'm like, what?
They not. I know. Get your QB at that second spot, man. You it's gonna be some that's there that's so called supposed to be quality that you can grab. Get them.
Exactly. Because look, at the end of the day. In football, you can have a turnaround season if you have a young, viable quarterback. You know what I'm saying? And I think the Giants, they need to stop thinking they're a model franchise like the Steelers or even like the Patriots, and understand that you have to rebuild. You're in rebuilding mode. We're not in let's continue the dynasty. You are in, okay, we had our run. Let's make sure we get back to it. Look at what Philly did. They drafted a quarterback, got him weapons, got defense, and now they're a championship contender, right? And they're going to be that for the foreseeable future until certain guys retire, certain guys move on, certain guys get hurt. But they have a quarterback. They have the stability. What is the New York Giants beyond this season? We have a question mark behind them. But if you draft a quarterback this year, we know at least for the next 3 to 4 years, it's his team. And we can see the progression, right? Like, we don't put a high bar for rookie quarterbacks. We just want to see, can you compete? Can you make plays? You know what I'm saying? When the time gets tough, you know, are you one that's going to put your head down? Or are you going to be like, yo, that didn't even happen. Let's go. We ready. Right? Like, that's what you want to see out of a rookie quarterback so that way you can build for the future. But as of right now, what is the future of the Giants? OBJ? Oh, he's an accessory. He's not a foundation. So that's why I would have got rid of him. I definitely would have got rid of Eli. I would have shored up that O-line. I would have drafted me a quarterback this season. And then you think about 2-3 years down the road. That's where the Giants need to be. They can't be thinking right now because Eli is not right now. And especially, Ken, you're mentioning the porous offensive line. This guy's never been mobile. He's older now. Come on, man. Like I just sometimes logically I don't understand where these franchises are. They got to move on. You got a new regime in there already. Then you need new guys. You need
got to move
new
on. Blood. Yep.
You need a new face of the franchise because it ain't Eli, and OBJ could be that, but this team is not ready for OBJ to be that. So you got to move on.
That's right.
Well, I don't have much to add, man. I think he can go either way, but I think I will go ahead and get my quarterback, mainly because there's talent here, and you don't know what the next couple of draft classes would present. I would pass and get me a quarterback, so I'm with you. And have him hold that clipboard for a year or two. That being said, so I think they'll probably take Josh Rosen, which would leave Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson on the board. And right now, according to one mock, they got the Giants taking Barkley. You already said that mistake. But if Rosen is gone, I don't know what the Jets do. So I'll just leave that one up for grabs. We'll let see how that play out. Right now, some people are thinking they'll take Rosen, which I think would be a good fit. But, no, actually, here's what I want to say. I think Baker Mayfield would be a good fit for the Jets, mainly because he has the temperament and the style for New York. He's big time. He's an attraction. And he's a competitor. And I think the Jets need somebody that has that type of moxie with them. So, I wouldn't mind seeing him going there. So, and I've seen some mocks with him being selected there. But the guy I'm more interested in, unless you guys have something on that, is Lamar Jackson. Well, Go ahead.
Well, hold on. Yeah. Well, no. I think you're spot on with Baker Mayfield being the face of the Jets, right? Like, if we think of the history of the Jets and what that franchise personifies, is braggadocio, is in your face. It is all of that. You know, it's Joe Namath. It's Brian Cox. It's Santana Moss. It's Muhammad Wilkins. It's so many guys. You know what I'm saying? And I think Baker Mayfield plays into the history of what the Jets have been. I would question his arm strength in that weather and also his hand size in that weather. But outside of that, I think he checks every other box that the Jets would want out of a quarterback.
Yeah, so Darnold's gone. Rosen's gone. Mayfield is gone, so B, that leaves Saquon Barkley to the Cleveland Browns if it play out like that, which you said you would love to do. So yeah, hopefully they would. I mean,
that's a dream scenario for Cleveland, man. Like that's a dream scenario. You get arguably in going into the draft. I mean, of course, we don't know how his career going to pan out. But you arguably grabbing pretty much like the rank one QB of the draft, right? And your number one overall pick. Then you come back and get arguably the number one ranked running back in the draft to talk about rebuilding. Talk about going from 0-16 to now you have what we think is the best QB coming into the draft and the best running back. What better way you need to start from zero, from scratch, to draft a top QB and a top running back? Come on, that's like a dream scenario for the Browns. So if that
isn't Josh Gordon coming back?
Yes.
He's already back.
That's what I'm saying. Josh Gordon, you got Josh Gordon. You already got Carlos Hyde as your back. Like, he's a solid back. And then you can, you know, him and Barkley would be, you know, running that ball. And then probably Barkley end up becoming the Ty Gurley type of starter for the Browns. And then you got Carlos Hyde backing him up, taking some kids. Man, that's a good scenario for Cleveland, man. They already got the receivers, tight end, QB, and running backs checked as far as the young talent. You know what I'm saying? So, dream scenario. At that point, if you draft those that QB and running back Barkley, you can pretty much work on your offensive line. You can work on some defense. You know, like, you could that gives you so much room in the rest of the draft because they got a whole lot of picks. You can work on offensive linemen. You can work on defensive tackles. You can work on, you know, some, you know, get a crucial linebacker. Because at that point, and you know, when you get on the defensive side, you can still pick gems in the third, fourth, fifth round. Like, so, and if the Browns play this smart and if that scenario happens, man, that's a dream scenario for the Browns.
Hey, you said it all there, man. So the last one, Lamar Jackson, you know, we're big fans of Lamar Jackson on this show. I know I am. We've all spoken highly of him at some point in time on the show. Rumors, and we know how these reports can be, and these rumors are, especially with the draft, is that New England, they are interested in Lamar Jackson. What do you guys think about that? Because that seems like an odd fit. At least it does to me. I don't know how that'll work. What do you guys think?
I think that's extremely interesting.
I'm scared.
I think, okay, I put it to you like this. If Bill Belichick drafts Lamar Jackson and Lamar gets to play either next year or the year after, and Belichick wins with this guy, he's already the greatest coach. But I think it's not even arguable at that point. You know what I'm saying? Because you're 100% right. Like, look at all of the coaches that he's had. I mean, coaches, all of the quarterbacks that he's had, Drew Bledsoe, obviously Tom, all of the other days, Garoppolo, you know what I'm saying? So if he brings in Lamar.
Matt Castle,
you know what I'm saying? He's made guys' careers. Oh, Jacoby Brissett, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
If he's able to bring in Lamar and Lamar progresses and he has any pocket IQ, if he's able to develop that, and also, you know, being able to play underneath center, oh my God, we're talking Vic 2.0, because I have not, and I think Vic was definitely on another level as a quarterback than Lamar Jackson, but I think Lamar Jackson is the same level of athlete as Michael Vick, and if Bill Belichick can untap that quarterback potential in him, man, he's going to run the league another 7 years, 8 years, maybe more. It's scary. It's scary. But it's definitely questionable. I don't know
how scared. That looks. I'm nervous.
Why are you nervous?
Because when I see that, and, you know, it's going to be hard for the Patriots to let go of their golden boy in Tom Brady. I can definitely see Bill Belichick and them doing some sneaky stuff and switching them to wide receiver, playing a speedy position, man, or being a kickoff return. Something crazy, man.
Lamar said he ain't playing nothing but QB, yo.
Man, but you know what? If he get drafted, man, I can see that whole Patriots organization taking him to the sunken place, and he'll come back out of that training camp, and he'll be ready to run a 4.3 40. And they put him in the slot somewhere, and then he'd be returning kickoffs and everything, and we'd be like, what the hell? Because you know what's going to happen? Page is going to take him in the back and put him in the sucking place. He's going to walk into training camp like, yeah, I'm going for QB. They're going to be like, hey, yo, let me holler at you for a second, Lamar. Hey, come over here in this meeting. And as you know, they're going to close that door, lock it. He's going to come back out. You know what? I can do whatever I want to do for this team to help this team win. He's going to be out there running. I'm telling you, man, that's why I'm scared. That's why I'm scared, Ken. People, that's why I'm scared. I'm scared they're going to take him and put him in a sucking place. He's going to come back, and he's going to be willing to do anything to help the team win. He don't care if it don't care if it has to him to play wide receiver or kick return or go into that slot. He's going to do it. That's why I'm scared. They're going to take him out of that QB position, man. They're going to be like, nah, not you. You ain't about to be the face of our franchise at the time Brady leave. No, I'm scared, Ken. I'm scared.
They have him out there running like Black Grandpa was in that movie.
Right. He's gonna be looking just like that. Yeah, still trying to win that race, man. Still trying to. He's gonna be out there throwing balls just to nobody and stuff, trying to get that QB still trying. Jesus Christ.
I'll just say this to address what Kyle tweeted us today. What would happen if he did draft him? And you guys know how I feel about New England. Pro brother. Pro brother, man. As long as he playing QB, I'm gonna support the brother, man. So that's all I gotta say. So we'll see how that play out.
Wait a minute. So this means you're gonna get a Lamar Jackson Patriots jersey?
I don't have a football jersey. No, B.
I know. I'm just
I know you are.
Man.
That would be hilarious. I should get one just for kicks. Anyway, that's all we got on the draft. You know, it's all going to shake down Thursday. We'll see how everything plays out, and then we'll be back into the NBA playoffs. NFL, man, they so slick, man. They really try to stay on your TV screen or in your everyday life 24/7. 365 days a week. Anyway, let's get back into these NBA playoffs, man. Exciting playoffs so far. A lot of things have happened. We've been shocked by some things that have occurred in the Western Conference in particular. And we're going to get into that. We got, like I mentioned earlier, we got a lot of basketball-related questions from Twitter. So we'll address some of that. But first, man, Kyle sent us this in the thread, and Westbrook might be suspended. And I'll just say this: I think he will be. He was scheduled to check in. There was a skirmish between Felton hit Gobert, and Gobert went down. There was a skirmish, and Westbrook ended up on the court. And we all know what happened when San Antonio and Phoenix got into it, and many argue to this day that cost Phoenix that series.
Messed up Phoenix. Yep, it cost them that because they was gonna play in the finals.
Yep,
they was gonna be in the finals. Yep.
So the NBA, they don't play with this rule. They don't care who you are. They don't care the situation. That being said, you guys think he's gonna be suspended?
I don't think he is. I can't see that. But I know the rules are rules. I know it's like, okay, you got to abide by the rules. That goes for everybody. We don't care what's, you know, superstar or bench player or whatever. That would be a bad way for them to lose Westbrook and them to go out in this series like that. I don't know what Adam Silver's going to do.
Wouldn't it be fitting, though, if you think about it, like Westbrook suspended, given everything that's taken place so far, wouldn't it kind of just be like the perfect, not the perfect ending, but,
I know, you know. That would be kind of wrong. I wouldn't want to see that, but.
I wouldn't either, but would it surprise you?
It kind of wouldn't. Yeah, I see what you're saying. It wouldn't surprise me, but damn. Come on, man! Not don't go out like that. Not like that, Ken. It's like hard for me to accept it.
You know what, B? I live update during the recording. You're right. You're absolutely right. He wasn't suspended. They fined him $10,000, and did suspend him for the altercation. Wow, okay. Good. That Good. Is interesting. And they gave him a technical foul. Okay, so
they're gonna come out shooting free throws or something that first that game, something like that.
Yeah, so anytime you leave the bench, that's a one-game suspension, automatic. But I guess since he was, and I'm just reading this live now, since he was due to enter the game, they just felt they'll fine him instead. And Westbrook, here's what Westbrook told the reporters. Westbrook told reporters he heard the horn to allow him into the game. He said, I was already in the game. Once I was in the game, they told me to wait because they were going to review it. Once they did that, the altercation happened, so I was already on the floor. Okay. All right, cool. So there you go.
Okay, yeah.
That's loophole.
No Westbrook.
Loophole, FIFA.
Loophole. You know, man, it's America, man. This is America. There's always a loophole.
I guess Westbrook means more than the entire Phoenix Suns team. All right, well, that settles that. So there you have it. Next, let me jump to Anthony Davis, man. Let's just go ahead and get this out of the way. They swept the Blazers. Dame made us look bad. There's obviously a lot of reasons for that. Defensive coverages forcing them, you know, to give up the ball. Dame commenting on that. People on Twitter are saying that we need to have a conversation about Dame. No, we don't.
No. I mean, like I said on Twitter, and I think FIFA was tagged in this too. Like, unless this starts to become a pattern, you know.
But
you know,
it has been, though. If you look at every single playoff series outside of the first one that he had that walk-off three-point shot against Houston, the man has shot. He's averaged in every other series under 35% shooting.
But I get that. You're right, FIFO. But come on, let's look at eye tests here. You know how when we see guys' body language or we see guys not playing hard.
But are you judging him off of playoff Dame or regular season Dame? Because regular season Dame's that guy. But in the playoffs the last 4 years, he has struggled.
But it's not like he's giving up. Man, we seen players
I'm saying. No, hold on, B. We know that sports is about results. Wins, losses, and how well did you play? He has not played well since that first series. So are you a Dame apologist?
No, I'm not. But it ain't like James Harden, man. Like, I feel like when the lights is bright, dude, he disappears, man. Like, he literally disappears. In this particular situation, in just the series, I really think he just saw some defenses that he wasn't used to seeing. And I think he couldn't adjust. And then it was the coach's job to adjust, and they didn't make the right adjustments just in this particular series. But yeah, you're right. I looked at that too. His shooting percentage is freaking awful in the playoffs only in the last four to five years. So I give you that. But I guess I'm just like, look, at least this dude is out here fighting. He's out here trying his best. He's playing. Where we see superstars just literally disappear. Like,
B. Go away. But here's the thing, though. Like, just because Dame plays hard, he has to gain results somehow, some way. Because you can have ugly losses or ugly game where you still win, right? But Dame is not winning at all. And it's not because of lack of trying. We know he's trying, and teams are scheming him out of it, right? So we gotta Dame doesn't get all of the blame. Some of that is also Terry Stotts, right?
Yeah, I'm about to
right?
say that's not
right?
all
so, of so, so we understand that. But at the end of the day, B, it's about results.
It's about results. It's about results. Yeah, I see it. I get you.
And all I'm saying is you're sounding like a Dame apologist right now. And you know what it was?
It was this interview he did. Man. I think it was recently. I think I retweeted it. He was just like talking about like the different defensive coverage that was forcing them to like pass the ball. And I'm like, man, I felt bad for him. I was like, man, I know that feeling as a ball player. It's like, you know, that feeling where like teams play a certain defense or they scheme a certain way towards you. And you like, fuck, they taking me away from like getting in the rhythm or taking away from me.
But this is why I'm saying you sound like an apologist, because we can't give that pass to Bron. We can't give that pass to KD. We can't give that pass to Steph. Like none of the other greats, because remember, we're talking about Dame supposed to be in the MVP conversation. Dame is supposed to figure some of that out. Dame got, and you know what? Look, Jordan got swept. So it's not about being swept, but at least Jordan had at least one or two good games in that sweep. Dame did not have a good game.
He didn't even have a good stretch. Nope, he didn't.
Because sometimes we know, like you said, right? We both hoop. We still hoop to this day. Sometimes the way a defense can strategize against you will take you out of your stuff. But a great player will still have stretches of you can't stop me. And Dame didn't have none of that. Dame looked like a deer in the headlights, bro. So that's why I'm saying you sound like a Dame apologist. I got to call Dame out. And again, I'm not putting 100% blame on Dame, but Dame has to take the brunt of that, because Dame wants to be considered an MVP candidate. Dame wants to be on the All-Star team. Dame wants to be on the USA team, and he's earned that. But you become a household name in the playoffs. And in this series, he looked like a role player, man. He really
did. Man, he shot like, I think he barely averaged 20 points a game. Like, he barely sniffed 20 points a game. He shot like 25% one game. I think it was game one or game two. He shot 25%, you know. And I even said this. I was like, man, Dame and CJ is being outplayed by Rondo and Jrue Holiday. Like, he was clearly being outplayed. I was like, as much as I hate for me to say this, Dame is being outplayed by the two people we would have never thought that would have like outplayed him like this, you know what I'm saying, in this matchup. So I get you. I get it. Yeah, he didn't step up. He didn't step up at all.
And think about it. And all I'm saying is we gave him so much praise. Right?
We did. Like That's why I was so angry.
He's balling. All this. Hey, when it don't go your way, you got to call it.
You got to call it. Yeah. Yeah.
You can't give him no excuse.
Yeah,
You're supposed to be an MVP.
You're supposed to be that guy. Yeah.
No excuse. We can't give Dame.
You're supposed to be that guy. Yeah, you're supposed to be that dude. So we pinned you as being that guy, and you didn't show us. You didn't show us this series, man. You got swept 2 years in a row.
Yep. Because look, I even put it to you like this: CJ had stretches of dominance, stretches, not a whole game, but in moments, 4 or 5 minute moments, CJ was getting off. Dame was nowhere to be found, man. And you know what? Like, my coaching brain
went off of 38,
and I felt that Terry Stotts did an awful job of using Dame as a decoy, moving Dame more so without the ball to get him more catch and shoot opportunities versus creating opportunities off of the bounce, because obviously Jrue Holiday was all up in that man pocket and they had help everywhere. You know what I'm saying? So you got to move Dame around. And I know I'm going a little bit left right now, but that's partly the reason why Golden State is so dangerous, because Steph Curry moves without the ball. Can he shoot off the dribble? Of course. But that man gets a lot of shots off of passes, off of ball movement, off of him moving around, off of long rebounds. We didn't see any of that from Portland. And part of that is Terry Stotts. I think he has a great offensive system. I think he has maximized them. But we saw, and Kenny Smith said it the best. He said sometimes the regular season shows you what you can be, and the playoffs shows you what you are.
And
Portland needs that three man. I think that they're stuck in that Clippers of a couple of years ago when they had that championship run where they didn't have that small forward / small power forward that can switch up and physically impact the game.
Yep, and defend. both defend most positions. Yeah,
exactly. Yep. They don't have
They don't have that. Nope, they don't.
And I think that that's their problem. If they had that guy, I'm not going to say that it would have changed the series, but I think it would have freed up Dame and CJ a bit more. They don't have a guy that can release pressure off of their two main guys, and that's a problem.
You know, and that's why I find it difficult to blame him. But I think you made a good point. We did spend a lot of time, you know, pumping him up, and you know he didn't show up. You know, like I tweeted, he was making us look bad, and I felt that for me when I watched them play, I didn't really take into consideration the rest of the players on the Pelicans. I thought it was still Anthony Davis, and that was it. I just totally ignored. I knew Jrue Holiday was there, and I knew what Rondo was about, but I think the guy that made the difference in that series was Mirotić. I totally forgot about Mirotić.
Yep.
Because I remember what this team looked like last year when they pretty much still had the same roster with Boogie, and Mirotić, to me, made the difference. The guy just couldn't miss. So I didn't really take that into consideration, and when I looked at the results of that series, and it manifested itself into a sweep. You know, I was like, it showed me the flaws, and you were kind of alluding to this a few seconds ago, FIFO, of the Portland Trailblazers and the deficiencies that they have. They had a bunch of young guys that haven't been developed and were not developed throughout the year, and you know, you're relying on Aminu and Harkless and Evan Turner. And going back to what Kenny Smith said, that's not enough. It's clearly, and the playoffs showed that. So Dame is enough to win games in the regular season, but in the playoffs, he need much, much more. But one of the takeaways I took from game four was Anthony Davis got off. Not by himself. Jrue Holiday put up 41-2. But, man, that performance by Anthony Davis to close that series out, that's when you start to really become a superstar. And so we're looking ahead, and I just couldn't help but wonder, is it Anthony Davis time? Like, what do you think?
You know what? When you watch Anthony Davis in a groove, it's almost like it's unfair, because it's like, what can't this guy do? He has handles like a guard. He's 7 feet with length, athleticism, IQ, stroke, 3-point mid-range, back to the basket game, blocks, defense, rotation. It's almost when he plays at the level that he played at, it looks like it's unfair. It looks like there's nobody on this planet that can guard that. But I think he just got to stay healthy. And you know, to your point, I think that this is his time. I think he has to seize the moment. Who they playing in the second round?
The winner of Golden State and Spurs. So Golden State.
So this is the opportunity to put himself and the Pelicans on the map.
Yep.
This is the prime opportunity, because everybody's watching Golden State. Golden State is the NBA darling right now, right? They are the dynasty of the NBA. So if Anthony Davis can steal two, maybe three games, his
shoot. What if they shock and win the series? Because I'm just saying what if? I'm just saying, because you know, I'm pretty sure Anthony Davis is motivated by this, because you know the last time they went up against him, they got swept. They didn't get a game. You know, playoff Rondo is going to be in Stephen Curry hurt mugs. You know, Stephen Curry is not going to be 100%. Playoff Rondo, And let's not forget, man, Jrue Holiday. Now I think he's back into form, because remember before the injuries and before his situation with his wife, you know, Jrue was like looking. You know, he was that dude. You know what I'm saying? He was a bona fide like up and coming star. So, you know, until of course injuries and then his, you know, the situation with his wife. And now, like, I think that his mind is clear. He's back focusing on basketball, and we're seeing Jrue Holiday look like the Jrue Holiday of old. And I think, I don't know, man, like I said, what if? I said, if this is a big if. If they pull this off and Anthony Davis averaged like 42 points during this series, man, man, oh man.
You might have to. He look, if he does that, he's staking his claim as the best player on the.
Wow, but
that's what he's doing.
If that happens, if yeah, no, real talk. Seriously, if he can pull off and win this series and average anywhere between 37 to like 41 points a game while doing it, oh yeah, yeah. So you taking out the defending champs with Kevin Durant, and you win. Oh yeah, you got to stake that claim as the best in the world at that point.
Yep, you do, you do, because you already know they're gonna put Draymond on him. You know they're gonna put KD on him some. And if he could just die, like nobody on this squad, because look, Golden State has a problem with LeBron, and I'm going to say skillfully, Anthony Davis is on LeBron's level. Just LeBron just has way more accolades. He's just achieved more throughout his career than Anthony Davis has in his shorter career. But skillfully, there's only a handful of players that I will put on Bron's level, and Anthony Davis is one of those guys. So if he can pull that off, man, that's a tremendous feat.
Man, that would be incredible, and I'm really looking forward to that series. And thinking about it, looking at this Pelicans team versus that Trailblazers team, I think it'd be far more exciting because, you know, the Blazers, what they had, they weren't going to be able to compete. So, should be fun. All right. Last one, and then we get into the listener questions. They're playing right now. They're up 3-1 over the Miami Heat. Right now, the score is 72-59. So, with 3 minutes and 21 seconds left in the third quarter, unless something crazy happens, it looks like they're going to close this one out. We brought it up a couple of times on the show, fellas. A lot of people are jumping on the bandwagon. Let's give Q. Q brought it up first, and we kind of dismissed him. Chris Carter says, with new evidence, you have the right to change your mind. So I'm asking, have you guys changed your mind about the Sixers?
I put it to you like this. Q isn't as crazy as we once said he was on this show. And the proof is in the pudding, man. You look at their numbers, their defensive efficiency. You look at how many threes that they're hitting. You look at how they're playing. I will only say that their only Achilles heel is experience. But the one thing that can overcome that is tremendous talent. We see Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, LeBron have early success in their careers. So that's not to say that Ben Simmons and Embiid can't have early success. And looking at the path to the championship, who looks like the best team in the East? It looks like Philly. And when we look at LeBron and them, and they're struggling against Indiana, Philly would probably sweep Indy, or at least gentlemen sweep them like they about to do Miami. You know what I'm saying? So if Cleveland is struggling with them, and we know that that's the best basketball player on the planet, right? And we know we can't trust Toronto, and Boston is decimated. Philly's the best squad in the East, man.
So, look,
can they win it? I don't know. But I know they can definitely get there. Because and remember what I said when we was talking about it. I said if Joel Embiid continues to move his game up levels, there's nobody in the East that can stop him, or whatever team makes it out the West, he's gonna dominate. So that's gonna be a problem, man. That's gonna be a problem. I think they have a legitimate shot of winning it this year. They really do. So I'm gonna take what I said about Q back. That man ain't crazy. I think he was just a bit fanatical at the moment, but it's legit. They are 100% legit.
Yeah, I think instead of me having them going to the Eastern Conference Finals losing to Cleveland, I can see them in the finals now. Like I can see them in their role going to the finals. I can see it because like FIFO mentioned, you have a possibility of either playing Milwaukee or Boston. They can get them. You know what I mean? That's done. Then you might end up matching up against a Toronto. let's say if Cleveland, you know, barely get past Indiana and lose to Toronto, which I kind of don't see that happening either. But say they play Toronto in East Conference Finals, they gonna get them, and then you're looking at that day in the finals. So it's like, Q didn't sound as crazy, and you know the biased fan base in them wasn't as nuts as I thought it was. But yeah, I had them going Eastern Conference Finals, but now I can definitely see them in the finals in 2018. Man, Ben Simmons rookie year. Doing some Magic Johnson type stuff and taking his team to the finals. That's crazy. Now, winning it, I won't go that far. But having them playing in the finals, I'm feeling a little more.
Let's play your game, B. What if? What if they win?
What if they win? That'd be insane. Like, we wouldn't see something like this done since Magic. Like,
since Magic.
That's crazy. That'd be crazy, man. Like, so if they pull it off and win, be either Houston or Golden State.
Destination. It's the new free agent. Yep,
it sure would be. Yep, hands down. Man, playing with Ben Simmons and Joel? What? That'd be crazy. And speaking of, Joel got almost a triple-double already. Jesus Christ, he ain't even in the third quarter yet. This dude got 15 points, 9 rebounds, and I'm sorry. I was looking at the defensive rebounds and rebounds. But, yeah, he got 9 rebounds and 2 steals. Damn, 2 steals? And Ben Simmons almost got triple-double. 12, 6, and 7. Damn. That's crazy.
Too easy for them boys, man. Hey, you know what's the crazy thing about watching them play? Neither one of them really dominates the ball. And I think that when you watch, you know, when you watch Milwaukee play, it is hard to watch them play, man. The ball comes, they might run pick and roll, and everybody's watching. And everybody's playing off of one guy. But when you watch Philly, you know, and dare I say, they look a lot like Golden State in terms of their offensive movement, right? Like obviously the way that they want to attack is completely different, but the results are kind of the same, where you get open layups and open three-point shots, and they defend extremely well. But the thing that gets me when I watch Philly is how much movement they have, and everything is live. Like, you have two big guys setting a pick for JJ. He's coming around from the baseline, coming up to the wing. You got Bellinelli running the baseline to the other wing. You got pick and roll with Ben Simmons and Embiid. It's like, pick your poison. If you come and help, they got shooters all over the place, including Embiid. So it doesn't matter that Ben can't shoot, right? So I think if they make it and Golden State makes it, I think it's going to be interesting on how they decide to guard Ben Simmons, because I think that you're going to see a lot of Andre Iguodala on him. But I don't know, man. I don't know. I think they actually have a legitimate shot of beating Golden State. I think they have a legitimate shot of winning it all this year.
It's a fun exercise, man, to think about it. You know, what I like about the Sixers that I've seen so far is that they're responding to adversity like they've been playing in the league for years. You know, you look at the game they won last year, that was a close game. And Ben Simmons, he closed it out. You know, he put his head down and he got that bucket. Joel Embiid, you know, came in and took over. In the first game, it was the Europeans jacking up threes and hitting them from everywhere. They responded to a loss, and you got to credit JJ Redick for that, and the coaching, man. And I go back to the beginning of the year when they started out slow and they were losing, and there was a close game and I forgot who they were playing. It don't really matter, but Embiid was highly upset that they lost that game. Like, he was pissed and he was disappointed. And that showed me that his attitude, he was intent on changing the culture of Philly, not years ahead, but right now, this year. And we're starting to see that play out in the playoffs. So it's been fantastic. It's been fun. It's been exciting to watch. And they're proving a lot of us wrong. So we'll see what happens. But, yeah, I mean, Toronto, Washington, maybe even Cleveland. Like, do we trust any of them right now with the way they are playing? Not really. So, and they run off. They have an offense. Like, that's the other thing. They actually run an offense.
And see, and when it gets, see, you talked about adversity, right? Like even Houston, almost all of the best teams, when it gets clutch time, they play a lot of one-on-one basketball. When you watch Philly, they run their sets. They know what they want to get, where they want to get it, and how they want to get it, and they execute. You know what I'm saying? And like you said, man, for a young squad, especially for your two best players to be under the age of 25 to do this, that it's a problem. It's a major problem for the rest of the league, because if these boys taste championship, just the finals, they don't have to win, but if they taste that, what do you think that's going to do for them next year? That's only going to advance their progression. That's only going to increase the possibilities of signing a LeBron or a Paul George or KD or Kawhi. Like that's what that does. And they're already great. So they're only going to be that much better. So man, I'm really interested to see how the rest of the playoffs go. But second round, I think they got that, because Milwaukee or Boston cannot beat them. So I'm already penciling them in for the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think that they can dismantle Cleveland, because what are they going to do with Joel, man? Are you going to play Tristan? like what are you gonna do? And then Toronto, oh my God, the biggest choke artist in the NBA. So yeah, I'm just excited. You know what? I know I'm rambling and ranting, but these playoffs are the most unpredictable playoffs we've seen in the last 10 years.
For sure, yeah. Which is great. It's exciting for guys like us. Because especially after the way the last couple of seasons have gone. So we actually got some drama. All right, well, let's get into these questions. So let's see here. So at Carly Ray Lolo, her first question was, why LeBron so thick for no reason? Clearly that's a joke. I have no answer for that question. That's none of my business. Her real question, I presume, is where is Dez gonna sign? I have no idea. A lot of people are tapping out the Ravens, the Giants, and somebody else said no. So I don't know, man. I think it's gonna depend on what happens in the draft and when teams actually get a chance to fill out their roster with draft picks. I think that'll help determine where he's going to go. But he eventually gets signed somewhere. Where I have no idea, to be honest with you. Do you guys have any inkling of where he may go? If not, we can move on.
I think, you know, based per Dez, I think he wants to stay in the NFC East. And I mentioned this before. I mean, hey, Redskins is always known for giving, you know, veterans, overpaying a lot of veterans. Guys go there whenever they know they ain't what they used to be, and then their skill level kind of diminished a little bit. Hey, Redskins, come to Redskins. We'll pay you a boatload of money. So I'm pretty sure he'd get the money that he looking for and then some. And then he'd still be in NFC East. He'd see the Cowboys twice a year. So I think I can see that. I was also hearing Green Bay. You know, now with them losing Jordy Nelson, you know, Dez Bryant would be a nice little plug to have in. And now you got someone like Aaron Rodgers throwing you the ball. So that would be, you know, an interesting fit if he goes there. But that's all I got. I got Redskins and Green Bay. I was also hearing the Giants. But, I mean, if he go there along with Odell, that you talking about diva. You're talking about diva.
Well, they already said, divas. Yeah, they already said no, too.
Oh, okay. You thought Giants said no?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
So yeah. So here's the thing. I think Dez potentially could be out the league.
Wow.
Think,
whoa.
Hey.
No, I mean, that's not bad. Go ahead. Go ahead, people.
Look,
go ahead.
Look, when you have as many, I think he was the number one wide receiver in drops last year.
Yeah.
Like, you get paid to catch the ball. And if you have the most drops, what do I need you here for? Because, first of all, you're not necessarily a locker room guy, right? Like, you're a me guy, which most wide receivers are. So we understand the nature of the position. But at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying? You're not producing. If you produce, then we can put up with some of that. But you're not producing. So who would want that? He's a headache. I think it's more so one of those things that when a team gets in a bind, maybe they thought they were somebody that they aren't, and going in through maybe week three, week four, and we're like, hey, we need a spark plug. They might hit up Dez, but I don't see Dez signing with a team. I just it's kind of like the Eli thing, man. Who wants that guy? You have the most drops in the NFL, and he's had some point blank joints. I'm talking about slant. We talking about wide open, taking your eye off the ball. Don't nobody want to deal with that, man. I think Dez might be out the league. I definitely think somebody will sign him, but I don't think we'll be able to pick it in the offseason. I think it's more so we have to see how the season is going to go. Somebody that didn't think this is where they would be around week three to week six, they'll pick up Dez. But I don't think he's going to sign in the offseason.
Man, FIFA on fire with the takes tonight. Right. That's what I'm talking about. At Mike Skill 1, and this is a question. We kind of already answered this earlier. Why are the Trailblazers so trash is the question. But we've already kind of addressed that earlier, so I just wanted to acknowledge the tweet. So thank you for sending that in. At Jack Main, if Curry doesn't play, do the Pelicans have a legitimate shot at knocking off the Warriors?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
The way they play, hell yeah.
Yes. Yes. Hell, remember, yeah. Like I said, people, they motivated, man. They motivated because they got knocked. You got swept by them last time. And you go in there and Stephen Curry. Let's say Stephen Curry missed two games. That's a chance. That's a shot. Yeah, I think that's a shot.
You got to steal one of those.
You got to. Yep. Game or two. Yep. You got to steal one of those.
I think Drew and Rondo need to be salivating because, look, if Steph's not 100%, can they still beat the Pelicans? Yes. But it's going to be extremely difficult because Drew is a bigger, stronger, faster player than Steph. And Rondo, we don't have to question. That's playoff. We're witnessing playoff Rondo. So with all that being said, if Steph's not 100%, that's going to hinder the success of Golden State. And I think that's going to put a lot of pressure on Draymond as a ball handler. And you're going to have Anthony Davis on him. So that adds to that. That's going to put an extreme amount of pressure on KD. I think he's almost going to feel like he's back in his OKC days where he has to carry a lot of that load. Because, look, we know that Klay Thompson he's a catch and shooter. He ain't nothing, right? So he's gonna be able to catch and shoot and move around. But the onus is going to be placed onto KD, and I think it's gonna be a lot. Can KD shoulder it? Of course he can. You know, say we're talking about he top three in the league. So he needs to be able to carry it, right? But the Pelicans have a legit shot, especially like how B alluded to earlier. This man, Anthony Davis, averaged anywhere between 35 to 42. It should be 6 or 7.
I'll say this. I think he has a shot, even if Curry plays. Because if you remember, the last time the Warriors lost the finals was when Curry came back from a similar injury. And he never got right. Except for a couple of games where he was talking about, I'm back. And with Drew Holiday and Rondo, I think they could put a lot of pressure on Curry, who may have limited mobility, especially if Anthony Davis performs at the levels that that you guys are saying that or thinking that he probably would be. So there you have it. Would be definitely really interesting.
My coaching hat tells me that Steve Kerr is going to have Draymond handling the ball a lot and just having Steph off the ball, because that the type of pressure that both Rondo and Drew can apply, I don't think Steph's knee is ready enough for that. You know what I'm saying? Like that's a lot of stress and pressure to put on Steph to deal with that type of pressure from Drew.
Man. Yeah, that is. That's I agree. I'm just interested to see how, like you mentioned, how the guard play is gonna do. Like how the Rondo gonna do against, you know, supposedly Steph Curry and Klay, or maybe just Klay. You know, maybe like we mentioned, if Steph missed one of those games or two of them, Pelicans gotta take one. They have to. They have to take one of these first two home games. Even if Steph play, they got to. In order to have, I think, to have a good shot. If they steal one of these away games, man, is this we might be in for a crazy series. I have a feeling, because Anthony Davis is gonna be a matchup nightmare for that front court.
Yeah, for real. All right, cool. Thank you for the question, at Jack Main. Moving on, at Fight Owens 55. Man, y'all got some interesting Twitter names. Man. All right, so his question, he had three, but we already talked about the Sixers possibly going to the finals, so we'll skip that one. This is about Westbrook. What will losing this series mean for Westbrook's legacy, and what's wrong with the Thunder offense? Who wanted to go first?
I'm so disappointed in Westbrook, man. Like, for one, you know, you go and you take your emotion out on, because Rick Rubio had a triple-double. You going on news conference saying, oh, yeah, we gonna shut that down. Dude, that's Rick Rubio. What y'all need to worry about is the freaking elephant in the room, Donovan Mitchell. Like, he's the one. This rookie is lighting y'all up. Like, and you want to put your energy on to Ricky Rubio? Like, dude, you need to focus. For one, you need to focus on winning the game, for one. Y'all need to focus on winning this series, because Melo is looking like, he almost looking like he don't even belong in this league no more.
Retired.
Like, yes. It like him. He don't even like he belong in this league anymore. And you know, and it's just like the shooting, their shot selection has been horrible. Like, it's so much stuff wrong with OKC. And for Westbrook to put all his energy into Ricky Rubio and you getting lightened up by Donovan Mitchell, that's a little disappointing. I mean, you know, we all know Donovan Mitchell is the rookie, but I just feel like, with the dog, that old school mentality that we always hold Westbrook to, you know, is the so-called, you know, quote-unquote, one of the last Mohicans of the old school. That looked a little weak, Westbrook, in my opinion. It looked a little weak for you to go at Ricky Rubio, which we know he's not going to duplicate those type of games like that, and you going at him. And then you showed your emotions out there like that and lose control yesterday. Well, I think, day before yesterday. Yeah, yesterday. You lose your emotion like that, and you know you're the captain. You make this team go, and so for you to lose your composure like this, that's bad, man. That's not good. So yeah, I was disappointed in Westbrook, man. Like I was definitely disappointed at dude how he reacted. How you going at somebody? You going at a little chihuahua where you need to be going at that pit bull, because you a pit bull yourself. So like I was upset. But yeah, if to answer the question, if they do lose this, I mean, we're going to look at Westbrook as he might be that player that never wins one. Like, either that or he needs a coach that can steer him in the right direction. Because remember, Allen Iverson was starting. He was, you know, before his 2001 year, he was kind of getting that pin on him as well. Like, a selfish player, always, you know, he plays his heart out, but don't nobody want to go play with him. He can't make everybody better. But look what happened when Larry Brown got there. I think the right coach got there for Allen Iverson to really kind of like shine and have his moments, where I think the same thing might need to happen for Westbrook. I don't think that coach, Billy Donovan, I don't think he's the right coach for him. I think we need to have a coach that can really steer Russell Westbrook in the right direction, man, because at this rate, yeah, he's going to go down as he's going to be a hell of a player. Great player. You know, we have plenty of great players, Hall of Fame players that never win a championship. I think he's just going to go under. He's going to be a player that's going to be, hey, Westbrook, you was amazing. You averaged a triple-double, but you just never won, never got a ring, you know. So that's what I think is going to happen at this rate as far as his legacy.
Yeah, I think B hit up on a lot of things. I think, you know, and I've – look, man, y'all listen.
Yeah, man, we hot in this bitch, man. We hot in here today.
Yeah, man, we are. We are. If you listen to Dead End Sports, man, go back. I've been said – Russell Westbrook needs a head coach that can put a system around him, tame him, make him understand basketball principles from a point guard perspective. Now, does he have every other intangible? Of course. But I've always said his Achilles heel is decision making and obviously, you know, controlling some of that rage that runs so rampant inside of him. You know what I'm saying? And key moments, he has to be able to control that. But at the end of the day, I think them losing to Utah makes OKC a desert for free agents. Who's going to want to go there, especially if Paul George walks? So not only did KD walk, Paul George is going to walk. You already know Carmelo's going to opt into his contract because the way he's playing, if he opts out, he's going to get a league minimum. And yep. I think he's slated to make 28 next year. So yep. he's not going to give that up.
He's not giving that up. Nope.
He's not going to give that up. That'd be the most stupidest financial decision. So if Paul George walks, Melo stays. You know, I think Russell is cut from that cloth of he's not going to go anywhere. He's going to ride it out. He's a ride or die guy. I get it, respect it. But until they get the right coach and they can prove that they can tweak Russell to be a better point guard, it's only going to be a Russell Westbrook show. So what it means for his legacy. I think B touched on that as well, man. Like, he's just going to be one of the greats, first ballot Hall of Famer, no question, that just doesn't win a championship. And I don't think there's anything wrong in that, but obviously you want to see guys like Westbrook that play hard, as hard as he plays, right? Like, I want to say he plays basketball in the right way in terms of his heart and his competitive fervor, but at the end of the day, is that enough to win a championship? And I don't think it is, but it's not going to diminish the overall legacy of Russell Westbrook. We're always going to have questions. He's always been the villain. The man averages a triple-double, and we question it. He doesn't average a triple-double, and we question it. We question about KD. We're always going to have questions regarding Russ. But the only true answer is he's great, and that's just where it is. I don't think, regardless of however many playoff losses he has, right, like the logo lost 8 times in the finals, or 9 times, or some ridiculous like that, mm-hmm. right? But he's still the logo. At the end of the day, we're gonna remember the triple double years. We're gonna remember how Russell Westbrook competed every single game in practice, everywhere. That's what we're gonna remember. That's never gonna be hampered by any playoff loss. So I think his legacy, as what it is as of right now, will still be intact when he's gone.
I think Russell Westbrook's legacy will be under. I think his career would be underappreciated, and he's being attacked from every angle possible. And Russell Westbrook is a victim of that dog mentality that we love and adore so much from when we grew up watching basketball. And B, you're right. There's nobody around to tame him, to help him harness that energy, and utilize his talents to the best of his ability. Allen Iverson is a perfect comp for him, and Allen Iverson is a big fan. And it would be great if Allen Iverson reached out to him and had a conversation with him about, you know, being able to play the game in the right way from a point guard perspective. But I think we're going to look at the triple doubles. I think people will look at those as little to nothing or meaningless, because they're going to look and say, well, did he win a championship? Because that's the world we're in right now. But is there anything wrong with going down in history as a Barkley?
And I disagree.
Because
look at Oscar Robertson. We give this man so much props for the triple double. How can we not give props for Russell?
Because of his style of play. And because
Oscar he doesn't, Wendell.
Well, yeah, that too. And he doesn't, and we just didn't have media, so he wasn't heavily scrutinized. So and people are already looking at this triple double like everybody that played the game know what it took to get it, and they marvel at it. But everybody outside of that, all they're gonna look at is like, yeah, but he lost in the first round though. Come on, FIFO, you know that's what they're gonna say. And I think that's going to follow him because of all of the stars that have left him. But let's go through a little exercise, because everybody want to say Harden left. Look at Harden's success. Look at KD's success. Look at, you know, he had Ibaka, and look what happened to him. He had Oladipo, and look what happened to him. Let's talk about Oladipo for a second. Oladipo credits this season to learning under Russell Westbrook, and now Oladipo is the number one option and not the second option. So, of course, his numbers will improve. And Oladipo may not have turned into the player he is today if it wasn't for Westbrook. So Westbrook deserves some credit for that. And Oladipo is on record for saying that. Let's look at Ibaka. Is Ibaka the same guy since he left OKC? Nah, he isn't. He's barely a third option in Toronto. Let's look at James Harden. James Harden, 65 wins. James Harden has had MVP seasons. Has James Harden showed up in the playoffs? No, I don't think so. So James Harden and Russell Westbrook, we can possibly say they're kind of on the same level. Now, this year, it may all change because Harden may win. But you know what that took? It took Chris Paul coming there to change that. So let's look at KD. KD left. What do people say about KD? KD won a title when he left Westbrook.
KD joined the 73-win team.
Thank you. Thank you. So everybody want to point out all of the players that improved or has gone on to better, you know, to success when they left Westbrook. And I'm not denying that that's true. But the only person that has really won anything, since we want to look at that, is KD, and look at the way he did it. So I think the narrative and the conversation and the way they frame things around Westbrook is unfortunate. But it is what it is, and I think that is going to be his legacy unless somebody comes along and change him. So now, the offense, that was the other part of the question. Look, man, go back and listen. I argue we had a big debate about Billy Donovan 2 years ago, I think.
You just called it too soon, Ken. You had to give that man a little time. Now you're right, but back then you wasn't right.
I saw it, man. And now people are, and to your point, FIFO, he's been given the time that you said he needed, right? And now people are saying, all right, you know what? We got to look at him, and his name is starting to come up more and more. And when you have guys like, people look at Westbrook and what he hasn't been able to accomplish with the players he's had. Well, Billy Donovan has also had these players. And he had a 3-1 lead that he blew. He lost. Now, last year, you know, whatever. He didn't have anybody. He just had Westbrook. So Westbrook did what he did to get him there. But then this year, Paul George, Melo, no offense. He's Scott Brooks 2.0. Scott Brooks light. I think Billy Donovan is going to go. And we can look at him as the problem with this Thunder offense. The Jazz actually run sets. They actually have an offense. They look functional on the team. The Thunder don't look functional on the team, and part of that has to do with this inability to rein Westbrook in. So I don't know, man. I still think they're going to come back and win this series because there's just a lot of things. Yeah, you know what?
Anybody win 3 straight?
Yeah, I do. They should have won. One game, I think they were about 16
to 17.
Get him.
Talking about Donovan Mitchell, rookie of the year, and now this guy, he out here balling, got this squad on the brink of elimination. You talking about OKC going to come back? What the hell you saw in OKC to make you think that? Because, first of all, OKC is actually positive 13 when Russell is on the bench and negative 13 when he's playing. So when your best player is on the court and you're negative 13, Ken, let me know what you're seeing to make you think that they're going to win 3 straight, bro, because I don't see it.
And that is what I'm seeing. Westbrook, Paul George, Melo have been completely inept in the fourth quarter. They have not played up to their standards. And when they have, they've looked like the better team. Billy Donovan need to get somehow Coach Gobert out of the paint and get Westbrook in more driving lanes. But they've had leads in all of these games, and they lost them. So they're just not closing. Westbrook has taken, I heard, one shot in the fourth quarter. He's not playing up to his standards. And if they play up to their standards the way they need to play and where they should be playing, then yeah, they can win three straight. But right now, okay. Would you all?
Okay, hold on.
You don't. You hold guys on. Don't think they're underperforming? I think they're okay. Underperforming.
Okay, these boys had 10 assists all game. All game, and they are the lowest assist team in the playoffs. How do you win like that, Ken? I look, basketball is a team sport, and if the number one team stat, you're the worst in, it doesn't matter how well you're playing in the fourth quarter or whatever. That means that nobody else has any type of rhythm because your three main horses are getting the lion's share of the shots, which it should be, but at the end of the day, when you don't have a system, you don't get other guys involved. They're not getting assists, Ken. Again, I don't know what you're seeing that lends you to believe that they could win three straight. Now, if you tell me they could win one or two, okay, I give you that. Just because of the great – we're talking about right. Two first ballot Hall of Fame. I give you that. Just off of the strength of that, I'll give you that. But three straight games, Ken, the way they're playing, the way that they pretty much played all season, they've been a roller coaster ride. Sometimes they look like, damn, they could maybe be the best team. And sometimes they're like, damn, you guys got three all-stars? And we're seeing the, damn, y'all got three all-stars type of squad. I don't see it. And then look, they've given Utah too much confidence. This boy, the man, Ingles, all up in playoff P face. He all up in the face, man. Who this guy? Who is Joe Ingles? Undrafted guy, all up in playoff P's face, man. Then you got Donovan Mitchell out here getting 30. He getting 30 a game. He a rookie, man. Look, Ken. Maybe you need my prescription because bro, I don't know what you're watching.
I'll put it to you like this. Two of the Nets three are in OKC. You just take care of business at home and go get one in Utah. Now that
it's tough,
that,
man, with that defense, man, the defense that Utah's been playing, come on now.
They're
the best
agree.
Defense in the playoffs right now. The best
yes,
defense
the best playoffs. Defense in the playoffs. Easily.
Okay, Ken.
OKC's ineptitude. That's why. But look, man, like
what do you mean? They were the third best defensively rated team in the NBA overall.
I'm talking about
and
in the playoffs.
The best in the playoffs. But they're the best in the playoffs. That doesn't have nothing to do with OKC. That has everything to do with Utah.
That's right.
Look. The assist, Westbrook is triple-double. When he gets triple-doubles, they win. He needs to go back to triple-double Westbrook. They have to get out of this first round. Playoff P can't let Joe Ingles work him like that. And they're leaving this man wide open. Anyway, man, it doesn't look good, but we've seen teams blow 3-1 leads. I think OKC can play better, and I think they will. But we'll see. I'm on the island. Let's move on. Al Blackstein asks, how much longer does Lou have in Cleveland? I think this is his last season, win or lose. I think, and you know, even when he had the health issues a while back, they were starting to put that out there that this may be his last season. And
put some air quotes on that, Ken.
What
health issues? Yeah, air quotes.
Yeah, I think health is going to sit him down. And if LeBron leaves, we know he's out for real, for real. So I think this will be his last year. Lou just ain't got it, man. Nah.
But I'm with you, man. Lou doesn't have it because he looks like 80% of the other coaches in the NBA, where you run pick and roll. And you let your best guys go, right? And I'm not saying that is the worst way to run an NBA team, but if you look at the past champions, they all have systems. Even the Miami LeBron squads, they had a system. Maybe it wasn't – you didn't see the structure all the time because when you play with D-Wade and LeBron, like, structure what? Like, you just let those guys go, so I get it. But if you look at San Antonio, look at Golden State, you look at some of the best teams now,
they have systems. And I always talk about it. Ty Lue at this point, and you were right, but you weren't right at the time when you said it about Ty Lue because you're too early again. Because you got to let a coach, you got to at least give a season to a coach for him to instill what he wants. And Ty Lue, like what is the what do they hang their hat on? Because it ain't defense. And Ty Lue this year had two squads. You had an old squad that couldn't move. Now you got young guys that can move, and your defense is still paltry. So what is Ty Lue's calling card at the moment? Right? Like is it Bron? Bron is making Ty Lue. Bron made David Black. Bron has made every coach. So to me, to answer the question, this is the last year for Lue. Win or lose. I think it's a wrap.
Yeah, I think Lue is done too. It's done. And I think even though I don't think FIFO agrees that you don't think Bron is staying, right? You think he's gone?
I think so. I think we have to wait for the off season. I think we have to see how strong of moves that Cleveland is going to make.
If Cleveland stay and if Lue is out, I can see my man from that used to coach Memphis come there.
Oh yeah, Fizdale.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah. I can see Bron boosting for him to come there. You know, if Bron stays at Cleveland.
Yeah, but you know, honestly, man, I think Cleveland just needs to start looking at life beyond LeBron. You know, I would just thank him for his services. Obviously, you would want him because that boosts the franchise value. But at this point, you really have to think about life without Bron because he's in his 15th year and. For however many years he decides to play, he has to be in a competing situation. This Cleveland squad, and you know what? I hats off to Cleveland because they did a hell of a job. They look. I feel that they did the best in terms of the Kyrie move. I think that obviously at the trade deadline they did the best that they possibly could. I think that they've given this staff. In this roster, every opportunity to play its best around LeBron. So I tip the hat off. But at the end of the day, this squad isn't championship ready. I don't know how much more championship ready you can get at the end or in the summer through trades and the draft. So again, Cleveland just needs to start looking at life after Bron. They're going to have potentially a top three pick this year. There's some guys in this draft and you need to get one of those guys. And that needs to be the face of your franchise moving forward. And I think LeBron is probably going to pick someplace that he knows perennially he's going to be in, at least in the conference finals, guaranteed. That's just where he is in his career. So again, hats off to Cleveland, but I think he's gone and Ty Lue's gone too.
All right. At Yeller Yurt, YELIRYERT. What is Utah capable of? We kind of discussed that. The second question that accompanies that is what moves do they have to make to become contenders? I think they need to improve the bench, although the bench has been productive in spots throughout the playoffs so far. Throughout the season, man, they were 30-8 down the stretch. But yeah, I just think a couple of more pieces on the bench would be good. And I think their starting five is okay. So I think if they improve their bench and incorporate them into it, I think they'll be straight. So we'll see if they move to the second round. And, you know, according to with 3-1 lead, they should, according to everybody except me. We'll see how they perform against the Warriors. So what are they capable of? I said, and I told the guys, I think they can go to the finals. But who they get next? Houston? Yeah, and Gobert? Like, how's Harden going to get in the paint against Gobert? You know, and even though Houston shoots a lot of threes, but yeah, we're talking about, you know, FIFO just said they're the number one defensive team in the NBA, so I can see Houston struggling against them. It depends on how they close the series out with the Timberwolves, and if Donovan Mitchell step up to the, you know, and continue to perform, and Joe Ingles continue to perform, and Derek Favors continue to be a beast, you know, it could happen. It could happen. Stranger things have happened before. So defense win championships. But it's a bit of a reach, but who knows? What do you guys think as far as the questions?
Go ahead, Viva.
If you got anything, if you don't, we can move on to the next.
Okay, yeah, you move on to the next one.
Yeah, we can move on.
All right, cool. At Illmind of Pat, this will be easy. Why is Hassan Whiteside overlooked? Just look at this series and just look at him against Embiid. He's been hurt all year. His attitude, I don't think, has been the best. And I think that's why. At Otis M. Garrison, this might be interesting. Discuss the Lakers' young core. What is Kyle Kuzma's ceiling? Will Brandon Ingram become top five in the world? What should they do with Julius Randle? Will Lonzo make a big step this summer? 1 year later, grading D'Angelo Russell trade. Okay, that's a lot.
We can tackle it, though. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go.
Wait, hold on. I'm gonna pull it up because I got to see that. That's a lot to unpack. Kyle Kuzma's ceiling, I think, is a perennial all-star. I don't think he's a superstar at all, but I definitely think he can make the all-star team anywhere between 3 to maybe 6 times during his career. So I think where they drafted him, that's amazing value. Brandon Ingram, top five in the world. I believe he has the potential. He still has the potential to be that. I think he needs a little bit more dog in him. I saw it a little bit more this year. I'm interested to see what he adds in the offseason. Obviously, he's beyond summer league. So he's not going to play in summer league this year. At least I wouldn't expect for him to play summer league. So I would only be able to evaluate him by preseason next year. But he has all of the potential in the world to be top five. Lonzo take a big step this summer. He needs to. I think he will, because when you look at the numbers, man, I said he was going to be a transcendent talent. I think he's a transcendent passer. And when you look at the number, he almost averaged a triple-double, and he struggled. But we've seen him pick it up, right? And like I said earlier in the podcast, even with rookie quarterbacks, rookie players in the NBA, you want to see how these guys take adversity, how they're able to progress throughout the year. And when they do have a big setback, how do they come back? And Lonzo had a lot of ups and downs in that first half. And then when he finally got healthy, he was on an upward trajectory. You know what I'm saying? So definitely I see Lonzo having a better year than year one. And he had a pretty damn good rookie year. I just think that the microscope is on him. Obviously, the bullseye on his back because of his dad. But he had a really good year. I'm expecting a better second year. And a year later, grading the D'Angelo Russell thing. They had to do it. I like it. Because at the end of the day, look, when you have a guy that's leading your team and you don't feel that he's a leader, and very early on he burned a lot of bridges in that locker room, it was the right move. So I'm gonna have to put that at about a B+, because they also got what's his name, the twin, Robin, is it Brooke? I always get him confused, but Brooke, they got the offensive Lopez.
Yeah, Brooke Lopez. Out of that deal.
Brooke Lopez. So I think it was good. In terms of Julius Randle, they got to let him walk. Because you want to maintain financial flexibility, right? Like they're targeting two potential superstars with max contracts. There's no way that you can give Julius Randle any type of contract and still have the salary cap space to sign the guys that you want. So it now becomes of teams with the salary cap space with the best fit that are going to vie for him in unrestricted free agency. And the Lakers are just going to let him walk. At this point, you have Kyle Kuzma on a rookie deal. You have Brandon Ingram still on a rookie deal. You still have Lonzo on a rookie deal. That's the way that they're going to get better. They're not going to sign Julius Randle at all to any money. So he's going to walk. Where he goes, I don't know.
B, you got anything?
Brandon Ingram, top five. That's still so early. He definitely got the tools. He got the tools. He just need to kind of beef up just a little bit, a smidget. And what was the other one by Lonzo? Is Lonzo, oh, did he need to make a jump this offseason? Definitely. He definitely need to make a need to focus. I hope he is right now. Like, I hope right now, where they're not playing, he's in the gym. He's working on his game. He's working on anything he needs to do to improve his game. And Randall, yeah, if you can trade him off and get, you know, because I think Lakers got enough to sign two big free agents. So, you know, depending on who you bring on, I think you can let Randall walk, or, you know, just do a sign and trade with a big time free agent, something. I don't know. But yeah, I think you can definitely cut ties with Randall, because you can always kind of get another type of prototype type of player like Randall.
You don't want to do a sign and trade, because sign and trade means that you are taking back the same amount of salary that you're letting off. So that means you're going to sign Julius to a contract, and then you're going to take back that same amount. Again, that hampers their salary cap flexibility. So I don't see them doing that. They're just going to let them walk.
Just let them walk? Okay.
They're just going to let them walk.
Yeah, because you can find another prototype type of Julius Randle. So I think it's not like he's like a once in a lifetime type talent or whatever. You'd be like, oh yeah, just let him go. You can find another power forward with that dog in him that can do the same thing as Randle do. So yeah, let him go. I just say let him walk.
All right. Shout out to Otis M. Garrison. Yeah, this was a good question. A lot of very pointed questions. FIFO really did a good job of breaking this down for you. I'll just add Brandon Ingram, top five in the world. I don't know, man. I think that's tough. I think that's tough based on what I'm seeing so far. Ben Simmons, Donovan Mitchell, Embiid. I don't know if there's room. Jason Tatum could be top five. I don't know. I don't know if there's going to be room for him. Top 10, maybe, yeah. But I do agree. I think he has the ability, number two draft pick in the NBA. So there's talent there. He just needs to develop, and that's going to be up to the Lakers. Will Lonzo take a big step this summer? Yeah, if he stopped trying to put out mixtapes, he probably could.
Stop it, Ken. Stop it. Stop hating on the man. Stop it.
So that's what I got for that. I agree with FIFO on Julius Randle and Kyle Kuzma. And the D'Angelo Russell trade is what I want to add my thoughts to. I think it was a good trade. I think it may have been an A trade, actually, because I think both parties ended up winning. D'Angelo Russell, LA just was probably too much for him, but I think with Lonzo, Lonzo, because of his dad, funny enough, it doesn't seem to really – he's not buckling under the pressure, it seems, so far. So I think he's used to playing under big lights or having to live up to high expectations. So L.A. seems like a perfect fit for him. D'Angelo Russell was able to go to another team without that pressure and to manifest into the player – we talked about him before on the podcast in terms of his ceiling, but I think he was able to kind of go somewhere and just start anew. And, you know, he has his team, and to be in Brooklyn, who can use a guy like him. I think they got Okafor too. I think they got something to build off of. So now it's up to D'Angelo Russell to take this opportunity and build on it. So I think both parties ended up winning in that trade. And D'Angelo Russell just burnt out. So I think it's an A. I think it's an A based on what we've seen from this last NBA season. So that's it. Thanks for the question, Otis M. Garrison. Just a few more here. At Ant243 Estrada, what trade package would you give the Spurs if you were the Lakers or Celtics? So this obviously is about Kawhi. So what trade package, if you were the Lakers or Celtics, will you give the Spurs for Kawhi Leonard? I'm going to take a back seat on this one. I'm not really good at this. So FIFO, if you got something, what would you do? And better yet, would you even do it?
If I'm the Celtics, I probably wouldn't. And the reason is because I already got three of those guys. So I'm not moving the two youngins. I'm going to let the Gordon Hayward thing play out. Obviously, if they wanted to do Gordon Hayward for Kawhi straight up, I'd do it. But I don't think San Antonio would, obviously. So I think that's null and void there. But if I'm the Celtics, I'm good. I'm already loaded up at that position. So I'll pass. If I'm the Lakers, they're like, what can you get? Like you don't have anybody with a big contract outside of, I think Luol Deng is still on the books, mm-hmm. and Robin Lopez or Brooke Lopez, you know what I'm saying? So I don't see either one of those squads having enough to give them. So I don't know. I think that we have to look at other suitors. So I'm not going to go to the other suitors because you didn't ask that. I'm not going to give you that, but. Those two trade partners, I don't see it happening.
All right. At Laker Boyasi, if you were the New Orleans Pelicans, would you still offer Boogie the max considering his injuries?
Yes. Okay. That's – come on.
Yeah. You got to keep him. And I think that's probably just because, you know, Pelicans looking so great without him, you know, especially if they make a run in this playoff. You know, that's always going to be the question. But no, no. I mean, I know an injury like that is scary because it's to a big guy. But no, you got to keep Boogie. You got to keep him. You got to keep him.
yeah. Now there is a report that came out today. It was buzz, not really confirmed, but they were saying that they were not considering it. But yeah, I'm with the fellas, man. You got. I mean. Come on, man. Don't be silly. All right. Next, will the Lakers sign Paul George in the offseason be the best move for the team in the long term? So, okay. So,
no. Simple.
You don't think so?
Nah. Because I think Paul George, I don't want to say this because it just has a negative connotation, but he's a tad overrated. Like, I don't think he's a savior. I think he, at best, he's the second best player on a championship team. And I don't think the Lakers still have the guy, the best player on a championship team. So long term, if you don't get the other guy, then you're just going to be a playoff squad. You're going to be in mediocrity. You're going to be in purgatory. Like, you're going to make the playoffs, but you're not going to have a good enough draft pick to draft somebody else that can put you over the top. And I like this whole, just because we're a particular franchise, we're going to attract free agents. That era is over with. We have seen that. It is over with. It does not matter the squad that you play for. You will get the same opportunities in terms of marketing and branding and all of that because your social media is more powerful than the squad that you play for. Your own personal brand is more powerful than the squad that you play for. So to me, Paul George is good if he already goes to a squad that has established guys. So, like, if he goes to a Philly, if he goes I'm just throwing them out there. I don't think it's a good fit, but Boston, if he goes to a Houston, if he goes to a squad, you know, a Portland, like if he said, yo, like I really like what Portland is, that's a scary team.
Mm-hmm.
But him going to the Lakers, like the Lakers are still young puppies and they have yet to show you an advancement or a big enough step to be like, okay, these are the next guys. We're not saying that about them. Everything that the Lakers have right now is potential and cap space. That's it. That's what they're selling their free agents on. So to me, it's not established enough for a guy like a Paul George. See, a guy like LeBron, oh, it don't matter. Like, because he's the main guy on a championship team, and that's the difference. There's not a lot of main guys on a championship team in free agency. So to me, if Paul George is the only free agent they can get, I feel that the Lakers are struck out if that's the only guy they get.
FIFO fire takes continue. Paul George overrated. My goodness. Wow. Okay. We have to come back to that one day. Do you agree with that, B? Not the overrated part, but Lakers signing Paul George, like the question.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I can see him definitely going back to his hometown in L.A., especially with the debacle that we're witnessing with OKC. Because I was, you know, of course, earlier this season, I was like, okay, well, if OKC go to West Finals or Finals, it's no doubt Paul George stay. But with this, what we're seeing, I can see him, you know, tucking tail and going to L.A., you know, playing for, you know, he always wanted to play for the Lakers. This would be his chance, I'm pretty sure. Magic at some point has been in his ear a little bit in one way or another. So, yeah, I think I can see him going back there, man. But, yeah, like FIFO, it's almost like no point. It's like, what are you going back for? I mean, you can't say I'm going back to win championship because Lakers is not on pace to be contending. Hell, they barely be a playoff team with if you just add Paul George there. So, you know, it's not like Paul George would want to go there to be like, hey, look, I go here because I think my chance of winning championship is pretty good. So, man, he'd go there, but I don't see why. You know, your chances pretty much be better staying at OKC. But, you know, with this debacle we witnessing, I don't know.
I think it would be the best move for the Lakers. They got a guy that want to be there. They got a guy that can get his own shot. So a guy that has star potential, superstar potential. So I think it would be a good move for the team. They need to sign somebody, and they need to add to that young core, and to have a veteran, I think would be good. And, you know, he wants to be there. So I think that matters. So I think it would be a good move for the team. But we'll see. This offseason is going to be really interesting. Moving on. All right, let's see. More questions about the Jazz. My Dead End Sports question is, and this came from at KJAIvy, why are people in the media and just fans in general so opposed to rooting for the Jazz when they have become the ultimate underdog but root and cover everyone else? Look, let me answer this question. All right, this is easy. They're not opposed to the Jazz. They're opposed to what the Jazz don't bring to them, and that's clicks. They don't bring traffic, and that's what it is. LeBron, Russell Westbrook, now Lonzo Ball. Lonzo Ball could suck, and they'll still cover him because it's traffic. It's a traffic-generated machine. Kevin Durant is arguably, let's just say Kevin Durant is the second-best player in the league. He barely gets any coverage. They talk about, okay, it's the Warriors, because the Warriors brings the clicks and the views because of Curry and Draymond, who's a firecracker, and Klay Thompson. And they had such a great story that they became the sensation of the NBA. So if you want the Jazz to receive more coverage, then root for Donovan Mitchell. If Donovan Mitchell becomes a superstar, you best believe the Jazz will get coverage because he will lead to revenue meaning click. So that's why that sort of thing happens. So it's not personal.
Yeah, it's definitely not personal. You already know next year Utah is going to get a bigger national schedule. you got a guy that is a slam dunk contestant, plus he getting 30 and knocking down threes and all of it. Yeah, the Utah Jazz will especially once they knock out OKC, they're definitely going to get more national coverage, and you're going to see more articles next year. This year, yeah, not so much. Who in the hell saw Donovan Mitchell doing what he's doing? God, I know I sure didn't. Most people didn't, right? Like nobody really saw what nobody was
able to. I knew he was going to be good, but not this good. Like, I knew he was going to be something, but damn. I didn't know he was gonna be like this before.
Yeah, I don't. Nobody could have. Nobody could have.
Yeah, I didn't see it. All right, cool. So there you have it. At VirgoChild69, do you think it's time for the Blazers, Wizards, and Hornets to make changes to their rosters, regardless of playoff runs this season? And what trades do you recommend for them to move forward from disappointing seasons? The Blazers definitely need to do some things to their roster. I definitely think they need to develop their talent. Zach Collins looked like he could play. Caleb Swanigan, let's see what he got. Pat Connaughton, I can't say his last
name. Pat Connaughton.
Yeah, Pat Connaughton.
You know what it is, though, Ken, with the Blazers, and I agree with you. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you, is that they've already paid some of their underachieving talent in terms of Myers Leonard. Like, he has a big contract now. Not a big – I'm not – obviously not $20 million, but, you know, over 10. He's in the teens. There's another player, too. I can't think of his name right now. And also Mo Harkless. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think collectively they're paying these guys close to $40 million in salary cap. And two of the guys can't play, like they're not in the rotation. That's the type of fat they need to trim. So I don't think that it's more so like wholesale changes, trade CJ, trade Dame. It's none of that. It's more so tweaking, but getting the right guy in there. That's the key thing. They need that wing player. That's the key factor for them.
Yeah, I think with the Wizards, I mean. They got pieces. I mean, Otto Porter has taken a step forward. I think Oubre could take another step forward. I don't know what they can do to improve. But some things need to happen with them. Oh, I said it last week, FIFO, you wasn't on here. I think they need to turn the keys over to Bradley Beal. I think Bradley Beal has proven when in John Wall's absence that he can carry a team. So I think he needs to – like, John Wall is dynamic – and can play, but he has a little Westbrook in him at times too. But Bradley Beal is a little bit more composed, and I think they really need to start focusing in a little bit more on him. So I would like to see that happen with them. I don't know if
I'm with you. Okay. And you know what? With the last two squads, I think they can actually help each other. I think that they need to trade John Wall. I think that the Hornets would be a perfect place for him, mainly because obviously Washington would get Kemba in return. Mm. And then if I'm Michael Jordan, I'm clearing enough cap space to try to go get Boogie and be like, hey, look, I know you like everything over there with AD, but look, they were winning without you and they really don't care about you. But I got your homie. I got your college homie. And you haven't played with a point guard like him since then. So you know what? And you already know John Wall on the back end, you know, is going to be pulling strings on trying to sign Boogie as well. So I think that could be a move. I think that could be a play in terms of those two teams actually helping each other out. And then you'll see a new look Hornets with John Wall and Boogie as the face of the franchise. And then you'll see Kemba with Washington instead of John Wall. So I can see a scenario like that happening.
Yeah, that would be nice. You got anything to add, B? What are you?
Be like, hey, no, I'm watching this game.
No, I don't got nothing to add.
Okay. All right, two more. His name is William. His name's William. What is OKC's future? We've already talked about Paul George. So the second part of the question for those of you listening is where do you think Paul George should go? I think he should go to L.A., but what is OKC's future? Melo will be back next year because he's going to get that check. Roberson will be back. But I don't know, man. Like, that whole team is a mess. Their bench is a mess. They don't produce. Sam Presti, he has his work cut out for him because he went all in. He went all in on Paul George and Melo, and it's looking like a first-round exit. So Sam Presti is going to have to get back to work and see if he can pull off some more trades or deals. But I think this future, and I think we kind of talked about it earlier, FIFO and B, is, you know, it's going to be Westbrook. Westbrook is going to be making $30 million over the next couple of years. So you might be looking at your modern-day AI. So Paul George is going to leave, and Melo's going to stay. And you're going to get mediocre results again next year. And Billy Donovan may be gone after this year, too.
And if he's not, he's going to be on an extremely short leash next year.
Yeah, I can see that. Last one. At Third Eye Ego, what do you think? Oh, no. Who do you think is the best still at a productive level amongst the older vets still playing? His examples was Dirk, Manu, Crawford, Vince, etc. I think Manu and Crawford are two of the guys that I have. Dirk is definitely taking a step back this year. Vince is just playing because he just can't leave the game. But Manu, we saw what Manu did last in game four. And I think Crawford just hasn't gotten enough tick in Minnesota, but I think he can still play the game. He still looks the same. So those are the two I got.
Yeah, that man, Jamal, man, me and
yeah, I was gonna say Crawford this as well.
Yeah, man, Jamal Crawford, hands down, because he still look like he's 20. Yeah. He still hoop like he's 20 years old. Like, there's no decline. He's not slower. You know, I know from experience that you get older, you lose a lot of agility. He hasn't lost any agility. He still be hurting people. He still can go off for 50 any game. Like, I think he's the most viable over 30-something guy that we have in the league right now.
Yeah. What are you saying, B? You said Crawford, too?
Yeah, I said Crawford, too.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, I think Vince Carter, let's see, he is the oldest active player right now, 41 years old. So, anyway, man, this was fun. I enjoyed it. Thanks to everyone that sent in questions, some really good questions. And you know, we appreciate you guys listening and being a part of this week's show. That's going to do it for us this week. And we'll be back next week, man. Obviously with a lot more storylines to cover, as I think we'll be heading into the conference finals. I mean, what is it? Wait, what's next round? Round two? What do they call it?
The semifinals, the West. Yeah.
Okay. All right. There we go. Yep. There you have it. So that's it. That's going to do it for us. We out. Please subscribe. We'll catch you guys next week. Peace.
Peace.
Peace.